Mama.
Maman.
Mom.
Mommy.
Mommy.
This is Mother Mine. Reflections on our mothers and how they've shaped us from ordinary people across the globe. One, space.
I remember I was 14 in high school and I was having a birthday party. And, you know, usually when there's a party and it's chaperoned by parents, like, you know, it's an automatic kind of turn off. People are like, oh God, parents are going to be there. We're not going to be able to do anything. But like going into my senior year of high school, people were still talking about how much fun they had at that party. And mind you, Mom was upstairs along with like hella other parents. Like, she invited other parents to come and she got to know them, and they themselves were having their own little party upstairs. So I don't know what it is. Like, she just has this energy that, you know, makes you feel welcome, no questions asked, you know, no need to prove yourself. You know, it's like a very come as you are type of energy. She grew up playing piano, so we had an old piano. At that point, she was practicing Buddhism, so we had like what's called a butsudan in our living room. And, you know, floor-to-ceiling bookshelves of all her books from her program. And I feel like just inside of our apartment, like regardless of all the happening outside, you know, violence or pain or struggle that like many of our neighbors were facing, like inside our place, it was just always like a sanctuary, you know? And I feel like a lot of my friends liked coming over because of that. Everywhere I've gone, everywhere I've lived, whether it's a freaking dorm room or like a shitty apartment, I've always put in a lot of effort to make it feel kind of warm. You know, I'm not like the most artsy person, so my decorations might be a little kitschy or not fully put together, but I think that something that people always say whenever they come over, no matter where I've lived, is that, like, you know, it feels warm and inviting. Growing up, it was me, her, and my younger brother. And we were like the three musketeers. We spent a lot of time in the car because we lived in the suburbs. She commuted, we commuted to school. And so that kind of became like a special place where we listened to music together, where we had like kind of inside jokes. So, you know, when you're driving like in a tunnel, we used to do this thing, the three of us. So we'd drive through a tunnel, not a long tunnel, and the three of us would just scream. We'd be like, ah, and we'd hold it for as long as we could. Our goal was to basically hold, you know, to do that little like yell for like the duration of getting through the tunnel. And it's something that we still actually do. The rare moments where the three of us are together, we do that. But whenever I go through tunnels and cities, you know, like kind of longer tunnels, I have like lots of lights in them. So I'm not talking about like quaint little tunnels. I'm talking about like, you know, municipal tunnels, I guess. I still do that. Like, just even if it's silently, like in my own mind. There was a point, I think, where she wanted to name me Chelsea after Chelsea Clinton, which I think indicates to me that maybe she wanted me to be like, you know, first daughter caliber type of person. You know, I think she's always had aspirations of me in, honestly, like, you know, elite spaces and spaces of like prestige. And for the most part, I fulfilled that. I'm Ivy League educated and, you know, everything that comes with that, for better or for worse. I grew up with her taking us to like museums, right? And, you know, we lived in the DC area. So, you know, we had the Smithsonian and all that stuff was free, thank God. But, you know, she was like the sole parent on my block who was doing that stuff on a regular basis. You know, she had us in like extracurriculars when we were young. You know, she had my brother in chess club, you know, like, even though he didn't really like it. So she inherited kind of like a WASPy approach to child rearing that didn't really apply in any other domain besides like academics and like achievement, right? Like every other domain, she was like just like a free lady. But there was some certain things that she clung to. And I think because of the life trajectory of others in my family, recently she has been questioning those assumptions and questioning like the extent to which she's kind of maybe put pressure on her kids to fulfill those assumptions and to fulfill those expectations. But I don't think she's mad that, you know, I'm Ivy League educated. I don't think she's mad that I am where I am. For better or worse, I'm very self-reliant. I'm very independent, and not because she wasn't there for me, but again, because like I think I was following her example. And maybe because subconsciously I did realize that like at a young age I needed to be, you know, that I needed to basically kind of emotionally and mentally and, you know, academically and otherwise kind of have myself together. Like maybe there was a part of me that felt like she actually maybe couldn't be there for me and I just needed to grow up in that way. And that's an experience she had when she was a kid too. You know, she, for various reasons, had to grow up very fast and take care of herself very fast because the caretakers in her life were not really caretakers. So I think because of her, I value and I center self-reliance and independence. I think my mom sees me as highly self-sufficient, which I am. And so maybe, you know, she's just, because she's never really had to worry about me, she just doesn't maybe think that she has to give me that level of emotional attention. But sometimes I really ache for it. You know, sometimes I wish she would kind of like look at me directly and see me and not just see the things I've been able to achieve, but see all the ways that like I still want to grow and see all the ways that I feel lost. And I wish she could pick up like when I'm in pain or when I'm confused or when I just need a nice like cocktail of like guidance and tenderness. When I was in college and I was kind of starting a relationship with my current partner, and she was also starting a relationship with her current partner. And, you know, I think it was interesting because we had a lot of the same questions. And I think at that point, I was old enough to realize like, oh, you know, my mom has a lot of the same questions that I do about how relationships work. And mind you know, she's my mom and she's been married and she's been divorced. She's kind of had boyfriends, but, you know, my brother and I may or may not have sabotaged those relationships going up. And so I think that was maybe a time when I was like, oh, you know, she's got needs too. She wants love. She wants partnership. She wants affection. Not only does she want it, she might even need these things. So today, I called her at like 10 a.m. She didn't answer. And usually she's busy on the weekend. So I was like, all right, she'll call me back whenever she's ready. This bitty didn't call me back till like 6. And she was a little standoffish with me when I got on the phone. I was like, yo, what's up? Long story short, she was like, well, I was expecting you to call back. And I was like, wait, I called you at 10. You didn't answer. And I didn't give you enough, what, aggressive Mother's Day energy. So now you're like a little annoyed with me. She's like, yeah, you could have like called me back again and like send me a little like happy Mother's Day bitmoji. She's like, you know it's stupid, but it's what I need. And I'm like, okay, you know, I guess this is what you need. I'm seeing all the ways that she's maybe changing, and actually just talking now out loud about this is making me realize that, like, you know, she is aging. And as she ages, her needs will change. And I need to maybe think about what that means for how I relate to her as a daughter.
2. Hero.
Growing up with my mother was not very easy. First of all, because she's very dominant character, I would say, and she's very tidy and also perfectionist, I think. We were four siblings and there was a lot of things to do to keep everything in order that she liked. So she was very busy and she had a lot of things to do in the house and in the garden. She liked gardening actually very much. She likes it even today, though it's difficult for her to do it now because of her health condition. She still likes to plant some food in our small garden. But there were periods when that was almost a way to survive, to have our family having enough food. And thanks to her and of course to my father, even in the period of war when many people were struggling to survive, were coping with hunger, we were never hungry thanks to both of them. That was 1990-1995 war in Bosnia, and it was a really difficult and challenging time for my whole family in many aspects. But for my mother, it was especially challenging period because we had to flee our home and we became internally displaced persons. We were not having our house anymore or anything else. And in after-war period also, when things started getting back to normal, my father started working again, but the salaries were so low and life conditions were so difficult that she was forced to plant other people's garden so we would have enough of food. So in that way, my mother was a real hero, a real fighter for her family. My mother is not a very educated person. She is only a primary school graduate because she did not have opportunity to study more in that period because it was in the beginning of 1960s and it was a very difficult period. She was from a village and the next generation, for example, her sisters, younger sisters, had chance to go to high school, to get more educated, even to university. But in her period, it was not so. Despite that fact, I can say that my mother is extremely clever, wise person, and that I believe that if she had a chance to educate herself more, she would definitely become at least, some high position in some company or somewhere. She's that kind of person, I could say. Because of all this, I think she invested a lot in our education. I have two more sisters and one younger brother. My sisters are older than me. And in my family, accent was always on girls' education. It was always said that for girls, it's very important to educate themselves, to be able to stand on their feet in life, to be independent financially and in every other sense, to advocate their rights. There were many periods when I maybe could not understand my mother, especially in my teenager years, because that was the period when she was already getting into menopause and there was war of hormones in the house. Often, I can say we could not agree about some kind of level of my autonomy. As I said, she's a very dominant person and she wants to control a lot. And I'm also a very independent person. So since my childhood, I always wanted to do things my way by myself. So we had maybe some arguments about that topic most. For example, when I was at the university, I was getting some scholarship, pocket money, something, and she wanted me to give it to her, so she uses it or gives it back to me when I did it. And I was strongly against it, and I said, no, this is my money, I can do with it whatever I want, and I think I'm grown up enough, so I can decide when, how, and for what I can spend it. After my graduation, I started working in another city, and being away made somehow our relationship may be even better and stronger. A few years later on, I went for doing my PhD abroad in a different country where I did not know anyone, where I did not know language, and process of doing PhD, those who didn't know that it's very difficult. But my mother, who, as I said, was just primary school educated, was my best support. She was always encouraging me. She was always saying to me encouraging words, helping me in any way, listening to me crying for hours over Skype, etc., etc. It was really unbelievable how supportive she was. I can say that who I am today, I am definitely because of my mother. And we are probably not aware how important our parents, our mothers are in our life. Each of us, of course, in a way raises ourselves, builds up ourselves more through reading, through everything we do in life. But there is some subtle messages we are getting from early childhood on in our life. And those are some things that cannot be replaced or done later, added later in our life if we don't get it. So I think I got a solid basis of good moral, good working ethics, about basics in life, about some order in life, and I think all those characteristics helped me become who I am today, and that they will be helping me through my life until then.
3. Beautiful.
There is nothing she couldn't handle. She can do like anything she wants to. She's very strong, very beautiful. Dark hair, dark skin, dark eyes. All of this I have after her. I mean, I also have dark hair, dark skin, dark eyes. So I would say that we are very similar to each other, but also have a couple of things after my dad. So I can't lie about my parents, because when you see me and when you see them, you can guess that, yeah, we are the same family. But also, I can see a woman who is very insecure in some ways. She thinks that she is very fat, but she's not. I mean, she's not like small, but she's also not fat. And I think she's a beautiful woman. But she has this from her family, that her grandmother, she used to tell her that she's fat. So now when her back hurts her or something, she will not go for a massage, because she will not allow anyone to touch her back or to touch her at all, because she thinks she's fat and she should be ashamed of her body. But it's not true. I mean, we shouldn't be ashamed of our bodies. I mean, our bodies are wonderful, wonderful. They've been through so much with us. And her body has been here for almost 60 years. So her body went through a lot. When she was a little girl, she had this accident. She was skiing and she fell down and she cut her face with this ski somehow, I don't know how, but she damaged the muscle on her face. There is no scar or whatever, but when she's angry or when she is in some deep emotion, you can see her cheek, you know, under her eye. You can see that the cheek is just ticking, like doing boop, 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 boop. And that's when you can say that she is angry. I mean, you can't see it in the face. Her eyes are calm and there is no emotion on her lips or whatever, but you can see the cheek ticking. And that's when you know there is a problem. but she doesn't speak usually, which is what my father hates, because he is the kind of guy who wants to speak about everything and sometimes very loud, like he's not screaming, like there's no, but he just, when there is a problem, he wants to speak about it and find a solution, you know. But she is this kind of woman who doesn't speak about her emotions. One time we went to a holiday, you know, we went to seaside together, and we were in Greece. It was the evening, we were sitting, eating dinner and chatting and enjoying the seaside. And then suddenly she told me that like half a year ago, that time, that she wanted to kill herself. Because, you know, me and brother of mine, we were adults that time. It's like, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. And we left our house. We left the city. We have a big family house in the city where I was born. And, you know, they stayed here alone with one dog, sausage dog, so it's not a big dog. So she probably wanted to have something to live for. So they tried to have another baby. And they were not successful. So they went for some, like, medical help. And then she got pregnant. And she was pregnant for a couple of months. And then, yeah, she miscarried. And that was devastating for her. And then after half year or something, we were, you know, sitting there in Greece, eating dinner, enjoying the seaside. And then she told me that when she was going from the hospital, she was driving the car and she wanted to kill herself. She wanted to crash the car. Yeah, I saw her emotions. I saw everything. She was not only my mother, she was also a mother of someone else who was not born and will never be born.
4. Passion.
It's kind of like extremes, you know. I remember just so many beautiful, wonderful things. Her unconditional love, her smile and her sense of humor, and then also a lot of pain and sadness that came from her own desires for her own life not being realized. She returned to school when I was 5. She was already in her late 30s and went back to school to study composition at a time when women really didn't go back to college that late in life, and certainly not to study a very male-dominated profession like composition. So she was really someone very committed to her own path, her own way. And she kind of gambled everything, gambled her marriage, gambled with a lot of money that came from my grandmother, her mother, all to pursue her dream. I saw her sitting over an architect's drafting table writing her symphonic work, which was called Variants for Orchestra. It was kind of the final, like, thesis, if you will, to get her degree at the music conservatory she went to. And she was bent over that table for hours and hours every day leading up to the deadline for finishing it. And it was just extraordinary to witness her dedication, her determination, her perseverance. And I really understood, as a young girl, I was about 9 or 10 at the time she was doing this, just how much it meant to her. And I really do think her creative passion
passed down to me, and I share it because it's not something that everyone figures out or has. And for me and for her, passion is what enriches our lives and makes life worth living. My mother gave me the gift of a love of music and started me with piano lessons when I was 8 years old. I quit when I was 16, but I love the piano, have always loved the piano, and as an adult went back to playing it, not so much to memorize music the way I was forced to do when I was younger, but more just to hear the notes and the sounds and to really take pleasure in pieces that I can master without too much difficulty and just enjoy. She was very non-judgmental. I would just pour out my heart as a girl about all my little sadnesses, kids in class who bugged me, or kids I wanted to like me, or boys I liked, or whatever it was. It just seemed like she could take it in and listen and make me feel as though anything I said mattered. I don't think I do as well with my own kids, quite honestly. She would just take the time to sit. She was curious. She wanted to know about my day at school and what was going on in my life. I have carried that out with my kids as well, and I'm not sure they always appreciate it. I always loved it that my mother cared and wanted to know what was going on in my life. Because music was everything to her, she wanted it to be everything for me, or certainly very important to me. And as I grew older into my teenage years, I really just wanted to have more freedom. I went to a very demanding private prep school with a lot of work and homework, and I just didn't want to be saddled with an hour of practicing the piano every day on top of that. She would say, well, if you quit now, you'll regret it the rest of your life, which always scared the bejesus out of me. I mean, you hate as a young person to think you're making a mistake that you'll regret for the rest of your life. So I felt that was very unfair on her part. But I think she really honestly had this need for me perhaps to live out some dream of her own that she wasn't able to do. And so she put that on me. And so we went back and forth on that a lot. And that was very hard on both of us. She took her own life because she felt she had failed. She felt she had failed herself and all the people who had put faith and hope and money into her dream of becoming a composer. And that will be always a source of sadness for me. But at the same time, I do feel grateful that she left a legacy and grateful that she pushed through a lot of obstacles in order to work towards what she most believed in and wanted for herself and for her life. And I'm very proud and very grateful to be her daughter. Despite the pain, despite the sadness, I wouldn't choose anybody else.
Thank you so much for listening to Mother Mine. I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of our contributors. If you'd like to submit your thoughts about your mother, we'd love to hear from you. Just visit ourmothersourselves.com. That's ourmothersourselves.com. And click on Mother Mine for all of the details on how to participate. I'd like to say a huge thank you to each and every one of our Kickstarter backers. Your generous contributions have made Mother Mine possible, and I am so grateful. Mother Mine is created by me, Katie Semro, and produced in conjunction with Our Mothers Ourselves.
Buenas noches, mi amor. Duerme bajo el rosal.